Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions. Whether you need a new warehouse line, hedging, or are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Hello, everybody. This is David Lincoln. Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, where we digest all the news of everything that's going on in the industry, and we bring it to you in one concise hour. And today, we are continuing our discussion on hedging. It is Monday, March 29th, and we've got a special guest going to be joining us a little later in the program, Rob Katz of Del Mar Database. Certainly, he and his company don't need much of an introduction, but we're going to be excited to get his input as we continue the discussion on hedging and should you do it. And so stay tuned. As we start out each program, we begin with the top of the hour with the hottest topic of every day in mortgage lending, and that's interest rates. Joe Farr, give us a rundown. Boy, last week was a volatile week, Joe.
Well, and we're starting a little bit that way this week. We just put out an unfavorable price change alert. MBS prices are down about 4/32nds after being a little bit above, up 1 or 2/32nds earlier in the day. And nothing really to point to today driving prices lower. But last week, as you mentioned, Dave, boy, it was a crazy week. We hadn't seen a week like that in a long time.
Yeah, and I think those that are hedging probably hope they don't see another one like it for a while. But like you said, this week is off to start. What was behind last week's volatility?
You know, everyone wants to – well, not everyone. Lots of people are wondering, did the MBS purchase program and the winding down of that have a big influence on last week's drop in prices? And I really don't think it did. Most of the drop came following a Wednesday and Thursday week Treasury auction. The five-year auction on Wednesday had yield requirements were significantly higher, not a great bid to cover ratio, and foreign participation was pretty weak. And we saw a 29/32nd drop, that's about 90 basis points in prices on Wednesday, largely following that. Somewhat earlier in the day, they had fallen following a better-than-expected durable orders report, but most of the fall came later in the day and was tied to a weak Treasury auction. The next day was also a day where we saw a fairly significant drop in prices, but fortunately, once they hit the bottom a little after midday yesterday, on Thursday, MBS prices rallied back to get to about where they started the day. So last week in all, we lost about 14/32nds, most of it due to a weak Treasury auction, and not so much due to the MBS purchase program. One of the things people can look at to see sort of to what extent the government's involvement or lack thereof in the MBS purchasing side of things is to look at the spread between the yields on treasuries and the yields on mortgage-backed securities. And, comparing to the 10-year is a fairly standard thing for us to do in the mortgage business. And the 10-year treasury yields moved in line, in fact, maybe even a little more than the yields on the MBS moved, meaning that it was a much broader market movement than just the mortgage-backed securities.
That is interesting.
The just looking a little deeper at those yields, Dave, going back to when things were in such great turmoil in November of 2008, before the MBS purchase program was announced, the spread, the yield required on mortgage-backed securities was about over 2% higher than the yields required on 10-year treasuries. That yield differential came down substantially and recently to as low of less than 60 basis points, where mortgage-backed security yields were just about the same as 10-year treasury yields, and they're still just a little above that low point, but somewhere between around 60 basis points. So the movement of the 10-year in the broader market is really what affected the mortgages this last week.
No question there was some volatility. So it was the 10-year that was the culprit, not the 7-year.
Well, no, the 5- and 7-year auctions pulled all the Treasury yields and pulled mortgage-backed security yields higher.
Okay. So they all contribute to it, but 10-year was the bigger one.
Yeah.
What does next week look like, Joe? I mean,
We have the you know, it's the first week of the month, and on Friday we're going to see the jobs report come out. It's a jobs report where there's actually an expectation for job creation. In fact, a couple hundred thousand is the consensus right now that we'll see jobs being created. It'll be a nice turn of events for the job market. I don't know how good it's going to be for mortgage rates, but it's always good to see that as a sign of things getting better in the economy. Next week, we'll also see the manufacturing data come out. Both the Chicago PMI and the Institute of Supply Management, the ISM Index, are going to be announced next week, next Wednesday and Thursday. And then next Wednesday is the last day in March. It's March 31, the infamous day when the MBS purchase program is over. So
we'll
still don't believe that we're going to see. I'm sorry?
I don't believe we're going to see them fully exit, especially if the unemployment number is not strong, and we watch the Treasury still struggling a bit. I mean, it's just we can't let the mortgage industry fall apart with all the things that the government is doing right now and their involvement. So we'll have to see. That's for sure.
But I don't see mortgage rates rising immediately and significantly as a result of the government. The Fed program ending. There's too many other indicators that it won't. You know, the spread between the 10 years and the mortgages is small. But if it goes up a lot, I'd be surprised. And the just the market participants out there that are entering into transactions that are going to mature beyond Wednesday have already factored in a lot of this. So I don't see a big issue.
It's encouraging to hear that. I think there's anytime you hear the Fed's exiting a program and it could have the significance that it possibly could. Nice to hear that optimism, Joe. We're going to be talking a little bit in the Hot Topic segment about the Wall Street Journal article, but let's just get it quickly introduced, the one that's out there today.
Well, there were two. One was a wake-up call regarding mortgage rates, and the other was kind of taking the same position. I was just saying that the Fed's not to blame for the mortgage rate jump, but rates need to go higher. No question that that's going to happen. It's just a matter of when and how soon, and what's going to be the motivation for it. I think it'll be the fundamentals that motivate it, meaning the economy is beginning to grow and inflation becomes an issue. Right now, that's not the case. This morning, PCE came out, which is part of the personal income report, and PCE basically had an annual inflationary rate of 1.3%, which is very well within the low range. And so right now, inflation is not an issue, but as jobs begin to be created, things will move higher. So we're going to see rates move up because we are at decade low rates here. So just don't expect it all at once and expect it to be indicative of an improving economy.
You think volatility is going to continue to be a part of our market and the landscape for the given future?
Well, I think so. I mean, that's been the case before the MBS purchase program. It will be the case afterwards. I don't know that the Fed being in there probably being a consistent buyer for a large percentage of what was on the market was probably a little bit of a calming influence, but you know, and looking back over the last 12 months, we've had a pretty significant degree of volatility. So look for that to continue. Volatility, I don't think will be tremendously more so than what it has been.
Well, I think the big number for this week, as you pointed out, will be jobs creation. I was on the CBS, I was quoted on CBS Evening News and the Morning News throughout the weekend. Got a lot of emails from folks on that about related to Obama's program to provide stimulus or mortgage payments and reduction of the mortgage principal balances and even literally suspending mortgage payments for those that are unemployed. And they were asking me if this is the solution. I said, no, the solution is to get people back to work. So let's see what that jobs number comes in on at, and that is again on Friday, correct?
Yeah, everyone ought to keep in mind Friday is going to be a shortened day due to the Easter weekend. Stock markets are closed on Friday, and the bond market is going to be closing early on Friday. And for now, the jobs report is still scheduled to come out on Friday. It's a little bit odd that it comes out at a time when the stock market is going to be closed. But that'll be a really significant event if it's any stronger than that. I got to believe that the 200,000's got to feel like it's on the upper end of things. We talked earlier, Dave, it seems like it'd be easier to miss that lower than higher. If we miss it higher, that could be a really significant negative for the MBS prices.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Joe. Each week, Joe brings us the latest on interest rates, and we thank you so much. Stay tuned. We're going to be right back after this spot. And keep in mind we've got Rob Katz as a special guest just a little bit later. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you back. This is David Lickin, and we are so fortunate to have with us each and every week Alice Alvey to digest all that is going on. And Alice, I think you have your whole team reading and trying to stay on top of all the developments. Alice Alvey, give us the traffic report, as we refer to it, all the legislation moving down the legislative highway here. It seems like a superhighway all of a sudden.
Yeah, it does. Well, you know what? I think we're just going to focus on the major traffic jam that's going on due to one particular issue, and that's obviously trying to get through this Restoring American Financial Stability Act of 2010. Those of you who have listened to the program, you know, you've heard us talk about many, many pieces of legislation. This particular week, we thought it'd be best to just kind of slow down a little bit and focus on the key points within this 1,300 pages. I'm up to, page 12. In terms of actually reading, it's a little crazy. But, you know, there's a lot in the news. It's always amazing to me which news agency might pick a particular part of this legislation to focus on. And I know probably one of the biggest points that many people on our side of the industry are very concerned about, and that is definitely the risk retention component of this. So
Without question.
And that is still in the bill. And there is and actually, if you're looking for it, it's on page 858.
Dive right down and get your latest subscription to the legislative. It'll cure all insomnia. But, man, except when you read that part, and then it'll keep you awake at night. Go on. I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, that's all right. So what we end up with in combining several of the bills that we've been watching for you, those of you who've listened, like I said, you've watched House Bill 4173. Most of those components are in this Senate version, Restoring American Financial Stability Act. It does look like, without a doubt, we're going to end up with a new agency, the Bureau of Consumer Financial Protection. This is going to have quite a bit of power. They're going to oversee financial products for deposits, anybody extending credit, servicing, debt collecting, real estate settlement services even, investment advisors. Now, insurance is in a different section in this regulation and not covered under exactly the Bureau of Consumer Financial Protection. So they will have a lot of reach. It is going to be within the Federal Reserve System, which is going to be a presidentially appointed, Senate-approved director. They will have lots of divisions. So this bill is proposing that they have a research division, a community affairs division, an Office of Financial Literacy, Office of Fair Lending and Equal Credit Opportunity. So those of you who see big government dollars at work here, you are correct. There's going to be a lot of money. That's because we have spare money, right? So
we got a lot of that. Is this hope we could believe in? Oh, my gosh.
Anyway, sorry.
I'm trying to not stay political here when I listen to this.
Right. Well, you know, obviously there's benefits to trying. Now, the one side of this, now the Volcker rule that we've talked about in past shows is going to prevent depositories from engaging in proprietary trading, sponsoring, investing in hedge funds, and basically having any kind of relationship with hedge funds, needing to separate those. It still has that 5% credit risk retention requirement. There's no specifics in it, though, and that's the problem we have. We've got this big piece of legislation that's trying to be overreaching, covering all industries, when really there's a part of us, especially kind of the lender side, that needs to be addressed differently. I read the fine print. I see, oh my gosh, it's talking about expanding HMDA reporting requirements. It does abolish the OTS, the Office of Thrift Supervision, and transfer their authority to the OCC and FDIC. Several sections don't apply to our industry, but we're watching these key pieces for you. If you think there's another piece of legislation out there that to be watched, let us know. But at the moment, this is the big one. All the others seem to be on the back burner and going nowhere.
Well, you know, you look at the banking component, the fact that the OTS is going away. I mean, that does have a lot of significance into the banking world, because so much of the mortgage industry is now being dominated by the banking world. And so, very, very interesting, Alice. Thank you so much. Is there anything else that we should be watching out here that's I'm a little reading over your notes that you were so graciously prepared for me. Is there anything else that we want to go? I see the hot topic. We'll bring that up here in another segment.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. From a legislative standpoint, this is the biggest piece to watch. Certainly there may be others introduced as they try and come up with solutions for the market. But this one right now is the biggest piece to watch. We're trying to watch for management amendments that may be added to this, but that list is something we're still dissecting. That has not been anything critical at this point in terms of mortgage lenders.
Well, you know, to get to page 1,200 of 1,300 is no small feat, and it makes you almost want to ask this question. I wonder those that are looking at this proposed HR, what was the number again? I'm scrolling
up
here.
Well, the original one was HR 4173. This is right now the restructuring Restoring American Financial Stability Act of 2010. No number.
Well, you know, you wonder how they can read all this stuff and if they know what's going on in this. So anyway, but thank you so much, Alice, for bringing this to us. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this with our special guest, Rob Katz, Del Mar Database. Stay tuned.
Looking
thank
for
you so
a
much.
Full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals,
providing classroom and web-based delivery,
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Good to have you back. This is Dave Lickin with Lickin on Lending. By the way, we have so many people listening for the first time today. I'm looking at the switchboard. I want to welcome many of you that are listening for the first time. Each week we bring this program to you at this time. We recommend that you go to Blog Talk Radio and get the link, bookmark it. You can also put a notification on there, and it'll remind you of the program. Again, the purpose of this program is to digest all that's going on in the industry, try to bring it to you in a concise manner. We receive a lot of emails and suggestions of topics that people, our listeners, want to have covered. And this week, or this month, we've been focused on hedging. We've had Tom Milan, we've had Bruce Carr from Michigan Mutual. Tom Milan, Capital Markets Cooperative, Bruce Carr from Michigan Mutual, and today we have Rob Katz with us from Del Mar Database. Rob has got 16 years of experience in mortgage banking and technology industry. He's president of DMD, Del Mar Database. He is responsible for assuring all actions in the company support the corporate objective, and we're pleased to have him here and be a part of our objective of bringing you the information on hedging. Rob, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks so much for having me, David. A pleasure to be here.
Well, it's good to have you here. One of the things that we want to lead off from your perspective, and thank you, Rob, for going back and listening to the former broadcast and so we can stay in sync with what we've got, what we're presenting this month. But let's talk about it from this standpoint. Someone that has not yet made the decision to go into hedging, what are considerations they should have before making the decision to go from best efforts into mandatory, therefore hedging?
It's a great question. I'd say one of the first things I'd recommend that they do is if they didn't listen to the broadcast he had last week with Bruce Carr from Michigan Mutual or from Tom Milan of CMC the week before that, that they go check out those podcasts and listen to them. Both gentlemen spoke very elegantly about hedging and secondary strategies beyond best efforts and so forth. And Tom Milan, the business at CMC is to help lenders make that transition. So he's a world of good information. So I would start there and reach out and listen to those two recordings that you have up there on your website. I think number two, too, is to understand that, everybody I talk to in the industry is afraid of the risk associated with going, away
from
that effort. Yeah, and I think what you need to realize is that risk can be mitigated. I mean, that's what hedging is all about, is it brings balance to the risk that is there. And really, in today's marketplace with tight margins, the ability to get 20 or 30 extra basis points, on the loans that you're selling, that's real money. And don't be afraid of the word risk, and make sure you get educated on it. And listening to this program and the prior programs is a great way to be able to go do that. And, one more point I want to throw out there, too, is, Joe, earlier in this broadcast made the point that if you look at market volatility over the past 12 months, it's been there. And yet lenders that have been hedging and doing stuff beyond best efforts have made more money than those lenders that were doing best efforts, even in a volatile market. So I don't think, having the volatility that's going on right now should scare anybody off, because it's still a really good strategy to move down that path.
It's so critical, especially when it comes to earnings. You look at those that we look at balance sheets. We audit companies, or don't audit. We're not an auditing firm. We review companies' balance sheets on behalf of a lot of warehouse lenders and correspondent lenders across the country. And it is a decided advantage for you as the listener, as you as a mortgage banker, to implement a strategy of hedging. You just won't believe what last year's bottom line, the difference it made in looking at two very comparable companies, the difference between the two was significant. Let's get into some of the issues that you're seeing that when you're making that decision from whether or not to make the decision to get into hedging and leave the security and comfort of best efforts and moving into hedging, what are some of the other considerations, Rob, that you feel are important for a lender to make?
Number one, top of the list, and again, both Tom and Bruce referenced this as well, so this is nothing new, is you've got to have a centralized lock desk. Today's market, I'm always surprised to hear when there's lenders that let their loan officers lock directly with their investors. Even if you don't go down the path of getting into doing hedging and sophisticated secondary stuff and you're going to stay with best efforts, I think it introduces a tremendous amount of risk to have your LOs locking directly with investors. Now, clearly, if you're going to hedge, the reason why you can't have the LOs locked directly is because they have no idea who the investor is going to be. Right? Those are decisions that you make later on. So there's nobody for them to call and lock in. So you really do need to centralize that. So,
and let me interject right here. One of the things I want to think is so important, we have a lot of loan officers that are listening to the program out there. This is not to be mean or to take away power from the loan officer. It's to empower your company and specifically you to make more money, have more options to deliver loans. So this is not to be viewed by loan officers out there listening as they're taking something away from me. The ultimate goal is to give back there. And I know, Joe, you have been very involved in hedging and with your former companies, and now you provide a lot of information. And you know that you see that struggle that goes on in some companies, don't you, Joe?
Well, and it's not just, I mean, there's pickup that you can get from a pricing perspective, whether that gets passed on in the form of a more competitive price on the street or more profit on the bottom line. But, you know, with the underwriting process being so difficult these days and the ability to have a loan that is going to be funded based on your company's terms and not based on the decisions coming down from some other company would have to be a big advantage as well.
Well, and do you recommend, as companies are looking at, you know, how much they can actually pass on, you know, to the front lines, to the that they make sure they know how much their operation's going to cost them? You know, I've had customers we've dealt with have said, I'm just going to pass it all straight down to the front line. I went, oh, no, you're going to have some operational expense, but that can be different based on each company's setup.
Alice, it's a great point. And one of the things you can look to do, too, is introduce a little bit of technology into a lock desk. So if you're setting up a lock desk for the first time, you know, if you just throw bodies at that, you know, that can get kind of expensive. But if you put in place some technology that lets, for example, a loan officer, you know, price their loan through a website and request their rate locks through a website, so things are all coming centralized into your place, it makes the burden of being kind of that lock desk administrator almost more administrative as opposed to a really expensive secondary person. I've talked to some lenders who were considering this, and their thought is, oh, man, a lock desk, that's going to cost me somebody like $90,000 a year. But it doesn't have to be that way. It can be somebody who's less expensive than that and again, you know, put a couple of bits and bytes in the way and some software in the middle of it, and it really streamlines the process and makes it less of big decision and more of, okay, I'm just going to gather up this lock information and have a place where I can manage it all and retain it all, so that their operational costs do go up a little bit, but it's certainly not, you know, out of this world in terms of the expense that's there.
You were talking, Rob, to one of the big five investors. I thought what they said was really interesting, and I want our listeners to pay real close attention to this because it really comes down to the business owners, and it should be in the best interest of the loan officers as to why to go to a centralized desk. I love that quote. Share that with our listeners.
Sure. So just to put it in context, I was at you know, one of the MBA trade shows a couple months back and chatting with the head of correspondent lending for one of the big five, and I promised him I wouldn't share who he was, and when you hear the story, I think you'll understand why. So, yeah, we're talking about a bunch of different stuff, and I threw out the question. I said, you know, how do you guys feel about lenders that have loan officers locked directly with you? And he breaks out into this huge grin, and he's like, ah, we love it when lenders let that happen. And I don't know, the look on my face must have shocked him back into reality, because my jaw hit the ground. He goes, look, here's the reality of it is we price it out differently. Lenders who let their loan officers lock directly with us, they get worse pricing than lenders that have a centralized lock desk. We would prefer if everyone had a central lock desk, but we price the difference into the pricing. So really, you know, we're making more money in those situations.
You know what? A lot of the companies out there listening going, you mean to say that they have different pricing structures? It's just they're not reading off a rate sheet? Listen, folks, everyone's in the business to make money. And if there's an opportunity to pick up a little bit because someone's new, and you know what? It's more work for a correspondent to have to deal with a whole lot of different people from one company than one place. So there's a cost factor in it as well. So, Rob, that is such a good point, and I just would love to just park on that and let everyone just sit and digest that one piece of information. But let's take a quick break. We'll be right back after this word.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
Whether you need a new warehouse line, or making the transition from broker to banker, are interested in mergers and acquisitions,
or anything in between, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage Mortgage Lending. The Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back to Licken and Lending. This is Dave Licken, and we have our special guest, Rob Katz, president of Del Mar Database. Rob, that point you just made was so solid. The correspondent lender that got that big smile on his face because and said and commented back to you, I would have fallen on the floor too when he came back and says, we love it because we can make more money. We're here to show you and tell you listeners how to make more money, big money, in the area of secondary marketing. There comes with risk. That comes with risk. But that does not have to come at me. Risk does not have to equate to loss of revenue. In fact, if it's done right and you have the right systems, the importance of technology is what this whole segment's about. You can actually use that volatility to your advantage. Let's get into it. There's someone, let's you know, if you can imagine the listener out there that's made the decision to move from best efforts to go to mandatory, but they haven't yet launched. What are the critical considerations they need to make, if I can get that out of my mouth, what are the critical considerations they need to make, Rob, before making that that transition and going live?
Sure. If you go back and you listen to Tom Milan's comments on the topic as well, it's amazing how it really all comes down to data. Folks in secondary who are going to be looking at the loans that are getting locked and the pull-through on those loans and understanding all the nuances of all the parameters that could have an impact on pricing and everything else, you have to have control of your data so you can make good hedging decisions and you can understand. I mean, look, this is all about risk mitigation, right? So, yes, hedging loans and playing the market and wondering where interest rates are going to go up and down and so forth, that is introducing risk. But you mitigate it all by being in control and making good, sound decisions around your hedging and your pull-through and your pipeline and everything else. So number one thing I think you need to look at is, do you have a central database of record? You know, a lot of mortgage operations still run on flat file systems like a Calyx and stuff. And those are great tools for originating loans. Those are great tools for loan officers.
But they're an origination system. Yeah, they're an origination system. They're not a risk management tool. They're not a tool that begins to track that. And I think one of the things we need to know is being able to predict the future of which loans will fund. And I think that's the number one thing. It's called pull-through. Being able to accurately select and predict those loans. One of the things Tom talked about in his segment, and Bruce certainly reiterated it, was the fact that, you know, testing your data, testing it before going live. Is that something you work with somebody on a lot, is setting up the systems, being able to make sure the downloads work, and then being able to look at that data and how accurate it is, how dependable it is?
Yeah, you know, actually where that really comes into play is all right, so let's say you're on a system like a DataTrack. So, you know, you got this centralized database of record, and part of what makes a back office lending tool work for lenders who want to be hedging is you have things in place like field level security. And so what that means, let's break that down, is every data element on a loan goes into a field in your database. Who has the right to change that data? And do those rights change as the loan is progressing down the pipeline? So, for example, a loan officer originates a loan and they throw it into underwriting. And let's say an underwriter hasn't even looked at the file yet, and the loan officer wants to go in and tweak something. Yeah, let them go have at it. There's been no decisions. Nothing's happened yet on that loan. So it can still be a playground for the loan officer to go in and tweak data and so forth. Now your underwriter starts evaluating the loan file, and they approve the loan with conditions. Well, from that point forward, do you really want a loan officer changing elements about that borrower file? Well, no, because your underwriter's already made a decision off of it. Now, the underwriters can change information because they're into managing the risk and everything else that goes on, but you want to lock them out of it. You know, then flash forward a little bit more, and you go and you draw your, you know, you get all your STIPs are cleared, and you draw your docs. Well, now you don't even want your underwriters making changes anymore because now you've got documents that are representing that loan. So same thing, when the lock comes in and that information gets to secondary, you know, if you've got these restrictions in place that ensure that the information of the data that you're looking at in secondary where you're going to make some of these hedging decisions is coming from is reliable data, because you know the people can't make changes to it once it's in your hands, That gives you an incredible amount of control over what's going on. And then one other little piece to it, too, is let's say something does happen on a loan. So you've got a loan that's locked, it's been approved and everything, and the price of the house changes. That happens, right? So the underwriter goes in and they want to go change the value of the property, or they want to change the sale price of the house. Well, you want a system that's going to notify your secondary group to let them know, hey, this locked loan just had an element change on it. That change could have an impact on your pricing. Go take a look at it again and see if you need to relock the loan or do something differently or change your hedge or whatever it is. But, you know, I think one of the things that Bruce had pointed out in his discussion was being blind to a change like that can cost you a tremendous amount of money. So let me now cycle back to the question that you asked. What our system does, or what any system like this would do, is you would operate your business with a database of record in place for a couple of months and build up a history. Then when you're working with a company like a CMC that's going to help you do your shock analysis and mark-to-market and figure out, you know, what your pipeline looks like and everything else, they're helping you based on real data from real loans that happened historically. So they can play what-if scenarios. They can say, hey, okay, you were selling all these loans on best efforts. Had you been hedging instead, you could have gained 30 basis points over this real historic period. So it's not so much that our software actually helps you predict in the future based on guesses of what's going to happen, but it lets you grab the data that you've already accumulated, real-life data from real-life loans, and do an analysis off of that information.
Well, huge to use your own data, because you really, what goes on in your sales lines, your operation, is not going to match up another company. So I think that's an important point people have to recognize. You're going to have to develop what works right in your shop, because you can see pull-throughs vary dramatically, just for example, from one operation to the next.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more.
And
I
that's
think
right
another...
up Alice. That's right up Alice's area. She is just so all over operations. And Alice, you've seen a lot of companies struggle with this. How would you recommend a client, you know, be able to shore up their operation in this area?
Well, I think, you know, what Rob has said is that, this database is going to be so dependent on accuracy. So one of the things we see is people treat their loan origination software system like a glorified typewriter, and it's really just printing documents for them. And you run into a lot of shops that do run various reports just from, management watching some aspects of it. But they really need to, I think step one is making sure you're using your system thoroughly well. You have accountability for fields. If you can't lock them down, you at least establish accountability. And then, like Rob said, take it to that next level. You've got to have the data that, like, a Delmar database can dissect for you.
Yeah, Alice, when you said that, I got a little tinge on the back of my neck.
Sorry.
No. It's a good way. I totally agree with
you.
It's
a good tinge.
One of the things that our system has in place, and that you'd want to look for in any banking software, is we call it the business rules. And what a business rule does is, as the loan is progressing through the various stages of your office, you know, getting underwriting approved and getting your STIPs all cleared and drawing your docs and funding the loan and everything else, is it double checks all of the data elements on that loan, and if the loan's not ready to move forward, it stops the process. And what kind of made the hair on the back of my neck stand up is, you know, we have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of lenders around the country. You know, DataTrack's been around for 20 years and so forth. And it still surprises me when I walk into an operation of one of my clients and I find out that they have, you know, 10 or 15 business rules turned on. We ship the product with 150 rules. So somebody actually went in there and turned business rules off. And to me, it's like you said, they're taking some really nice software that can control their business, and they're turning it into a typewriter. And it blows me away. When I look at our lenders that are really successful and those that have, you know, are making a lot of money hedging their loans and getting into mandatories and AOTs and going beyond the best efforts and whatnot, they can add, you know, one of our clients has 950 business rules. And what it does is it just really makes sure that all the data is ready for you before you let the loan move forward, so that by the time the folks in secondary are making decisions, they have 100% confidence that it's a complete loan file. They know that the likelihood of the loan getting suspended from their investors way down because it's a complete loan file. And it's just, you know, don't use it
good
as a typewriter tool, but using the system to control your business and mitigate risk and take the guesswork out of it. And number one thing is enforce your corporate policies, that people are doing business the way you want them to. It's a completely different experience, and their profitability is through the roof compared to the guys that have 10 business rules.
That is such a good point. It's a cultural thing, and Alice brings out a really good point. There's a lot of people using this, whatever computerized loan origination system they have, for a purpose entirely different. All of a sudden, it becomes so critical. That doesn't mean that you have to change your system. For example, the Bible, it's a well-known fact that one of the most widely used systems out there is Calyx Point. They have had a dominant market share. I know the folks at Encompass are beginning to come up a good distance, grabbing more and more market share. But if you have a Calyx and you're working with that system, that in itself is not sufficient. But you can receive the data, can you not, Rob, from a Calyx system and bring that in?
Absolutely. You know, we when we looked at the marketplace, you know, we've made the same determination you just did. Is, you know, Calyx is a market leader. LMA is, you know, growing in that space of loan origination. It'd be silly for us to not suck in a file. So yeah, I mean, our clients can import native BRW files, the Calyx Point file. They don't have to convert it to a DU file or anything like that. We don't necessarily want to implement massive changes to how clients are doing things on the origination side, because it's all about sales and getting loans in the door. We just want to make sure that once you do that, that you have control over your data and you're mitigating your risk all the way through, really for the life of the loan from that point forward.
You know, Dave, that's a question I have for you, because one of the things I hear from people when you bring up the fact that you need a loan origination, I'm going to say Mortgage Builder is another good one, for example, but that, you know, they say, what about my salespeople? If I tell them all this, you've got to pay attention to data and there's a centralized lock desk. I've had companies say, oh, I'm afraid that my salespeople will walk, or that, you know, they're not going to like that. You know, what do you say to that?
Oh, so that's such a great, that's a great comment. We do hear that a lot. We get that concern thrown at us a lot. Number one is how we frame up everything when we're talking. The truth is, I mean, the truth always works, Alice, as we talk about all the time. Truth works. The truth is you're going to have a company that's going to make more money. If it's making more money, you're going to be able, especially if it's more active in the markets, you're going to have a chance to be able to live and continue on. That's the obvious. Oh, duh. But beyond making money, it's just giving your company and your loan officers more options when things change. Rob was talking about that earlier. There's so many times where certain aspects of the loan will change. You have decided advantages when you're in a hedging program. I could go on and on and on, but that's a great question.
Yeah, if I could jump in too for a second too, Dave, and answer that too, Alice. One of the things that we have, for example, in our system is a web portal for the loan officer that exposes real time the current situation, all that back office data to the originator. So if you think about a scenario where the borrower calls up the loan officer with a, hey, you know, what's going on? I sent you all my paperwork. You know, when are we going to close on the loan? What's the status of it? Without a system of a back office, let's say they're just on a Calyx Point, the LO has to call into the back office and interrupt the underwriter and ask a bunch of questions and leave voicemails and all this other stuff. And meanwhile, the borrower is like, they just wanted a quick answer to what's going on with my loan. When you've got something centralized and you can expose that information to the LO, while they're on the phone with the borrower, they can actually hit a website, do a search for the borrower, and come up and say, hey, look, there's four conditions still, you know, getting in the way of us drawing docs. You know, three of those were taken care of, but one of them is we haven't heard back from your employer to validate that you work there. So if you could have them call back, that would really help. The borrower's like, okay, I'll do that right now. Thanks so much. And so no one gets interrupted. The loan officer's totally in control of their business, where before they were dependent on getting information from other people. So it is really easy and possible to sell this whole concept of kind of automating back office to the front line, because it's just going to make their job much easier to do.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I want to stress again, the fact is that if you go to this and you have to give up and go to a centralized lock desk, and for you loan officers that may feel like you're losing control, you're really not. You're gaining more programs, better pricing, and you got a company that's making more money. That is good for you. One of the things, Alice, you touched on about is the quality of the lay data. All of a sudden, the whole emphasis of quality control comes into play a lot more, because you are moving further down the accountability line. It's so important that you have a great quality control program and know what you're doing.
Yes, I agree.
No argument there from anybody, I don't think.
I tried to make a question there, but it just came out as a fact. We'll be right back after this quick break. Thank you.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever. and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs. And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lickin' on Lending Show.
It's good to have you back, folks. This is Dave Lickin with Lickin' on Lending again. Every week, we come to you live. Bookmark this time on your calendar. Bookmark this web link or this phone number that you're dialed in or listening to. And we're going to be bringing to you some really exciting topics in the next month, in the month of April. We're in a conversation with the agencies. We're in conversations with a number of the people within HUD and Jenny May. We want to bring all of this to bear in the next month. So stay tuned. We're going to be bringing you a lot of information. Send me your email. We'll be happy to broadcast to you or blast out to you an email blast of what's coming up so you can stay tuned. By the way, I was chuckling as we went to the last break. I really want to emphasize the importance of quality control and doing that right. And I know that was a selfless setup. I want to say thank you for Jan and Alice and everyone there, Wetzel's Trot and Mortgage U and Joe. Everyone that worked so many hours to put this program together. And a special shout out to those guys and Andy Alvey there, who is our producer there with Mortgage U and Wetzel's Trot. Thank you so much, Andy, for all that you do. Let's continue on this discussion. There's so much going on here. Let's talk about someone that is already hedging and what are the trends that are going on in the industry for that listener out there that is already hedging. If you could get into that, my friend.
Sure. One of the things you guys have, both Alice and you, and I think Joe earlier all mentioned, was pull-through. And the reason why it's so important to understand your pull-through, obviously, is because it's all about that risk mitigation. And so when you've got good data, and you're the guy or gal in secondary, and this is all your responsibility now, and you're taking on this risk and everything else, what's amazing is you can start to look at your business with new eyes. So, for example, you can measure your pull-through from lock to funding. You can measure your pull-through from docs drawn to funding. You can measure your pull-through from, docs signed to funding. I mean, you have fallout at all sorts of different things. And you get to start slicing your data up, so you can even do that by branch, or you can track it down to the loan officer, so that as you're looking at your lock pipeline and you're deciding how you want to hedge and how you want to mitigate the risk of taking on, the interest rate risk by not selling on best efforts, you can be totally in control of that and maybe even say, hey, look, I've got this one loan officer and his pull-through is 60%. We don't want to get rid of him because his volume is really high, but my average loan officer's pull-through is 80%. So when you know that and you're aware of that and you're measuring your pull-through that way, you can make hedging decisions based on how much of your pipeline is currently coming from that one LO that's got the bad pull-through but the high volume. And so it just puts you in total control. And, again, it's all about mitigating your risk. And when you understand your business this way, it's a lot less risky to know, oh, man, I better hedge more because it's Jimmy, the low pull-through guy. But, man, this loan officer, 100% of his loan's fund. He only does a loan that he knows is going to go through and fund. I don't have to hedge that loan quite as much.
Hey, can I jump? I have one thing I want to just jump in as a quick note to people. Please recheck your systems on how you are classifying an application and really measuring those pull-through numbers.
Good
and really
point.
Just kind of your general pipeline timing with the changes in RESPA. There's been so many system issues and maybe some patches that people have put in place or they weren't using their system correctly. And, don't forget that your reports and things, especially along the pull-through line, may have shifted a little bit as we've implemented some of these regulations over the last several months.
But it's a great point. I tell you, January 1 was the day of chaos. I mean, just talking as far as you know. And I know that loan volume really slowed down in January. And I've heard from almost all of my clients unanimously said that you know they always hate it when loan volume drops off, but they were kind of glad because it gave them a breather to make sure they were doing everything you know right to the best of their ability and so forth. So yeah, I totally agree that it's.
Oh, I had one customer say, "I've never been so busy not closing loans."
That's a sad. We shouldn't be laughing, right? That's a sad statement, actually. But
no,
true.
But that's you know, with the regulation changes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
One of the things you brought out about pull through is you know looking and being able to look at profitability by loan officer by different production groups, and that's where a good system is going to be able to help you, even beyond. And it becomes much more transparent when you are in the game of hedging. And Joe, you're a CPA. You understand the importance of knowing your numbers, managing by the numbers. Rob, comment of yours about your system and how this actually helps the accounting function of the of a lender, and what implications are there?
Sure, kind of a lot in that question you just threw at me. So I guess one thing I want to make. That's okay. Just to reiterate, too, on the value of pull-through and everything else, and this is a point that you know most lenders know, but sometimes you need to be reminded of the obvious. You guys don't make any money until you sell the loan. And everything you do leading up to that sale is a business cost to you. So one of the reasons why measuring your pull-through and keeping tabs of that, even if you're a best effort shop, keeping tabs of your pull-through is so important is because everything that every employee does in your shop until that loan sells for that loan is a cost to you. And if you've got a low pull-through, and if you've got a loan officer that's generating a lot of loans, but the pull-through to funding is really small, that guy is or gal is costing you a ton of money. And you need to either retrain them or replace them with somebody who's going to make sure that all that busy work that everybody is doing is actually going to pay off in the end because it's a loan that you end up selling.
Yep, and again, Rob Katz, we're not attacking mortgage originators that are listening on this. We're attacking anything that is not contributing to the bottom line. Again, why we're in this business is to make money. And there's so many loan officers that think they're doing great because they look at their funding volume, but they don't look at the chaos they're creating in there. Don't, if you're one of those loan officers or you're afraid you might be one of those loan officers, do not be afraid about this change unless you're not interested in making change. And if you're not interested in making change, we'll have a separate call on that. The most important is you want to help your company grow, and you're going to have to grow with it. And by having this, what I found so interesting, Rob, especially as you start looking at the pull-through, you start looking at which loan officers are really creating and dropping money to the bottom line, so important. We've got Shelley Haddon, who's a new employee of ours there in San Diego, going to be meeting with you and talking about how we can begin to do a better job of working with tools like Del Mar database to begin to really track your profitability. If you don't know where your numbers are, I tell you, you do. If you don't know where your data is, you don't know where your numbers are. If you don't know where your numbers are, you're flying blind. I tell you, it's a critical issue. Joe, you've been a little on the quiet side. I want you to jump into this discussion here. I know you've got so much to say, and you've managed this. Some of the lessons for those that are already hedging, Joe, or do you have some talking points there that you want to bring out for our listeners?
Yeah, well, Rob mentioned in his notes something that I found very interesting, and it had to do with his efficiency. What do you call it? An efficiency quotient?
The efficiency quotient, yeah, the EQ.
Yeah. That seems like a fairly basic measure, but it's something that I don't think most people focus on, and I'd love for you to explain that a little bit before we run out of time, and more specifically, when you see people that have first become gone from best efforts to mandatory, where do they pick up over the first few months, first 6 months, whatever, where do they pick up most of their efficiency?
Okay. All right. So what the EQ is, what the efficiency quotient is a really simple measurement that lenders should be doing on the first day of each month just to get a gauge of how efficient their operation is running. So what you do is you count up the total number of people that were necessary for you to do the business that you were in, and you want to exclude your loan officers. And the reason why we don't include loan officers is because there's a lot of volatility. You hire and fire loan officers. A lot of shops do very quickly, and so it's a number that moves around too much. But take everybody else, and you got to remember legal, you got to remember IT, you got to remember compliance. So it's all the people necessary for you to be a lender. Count the number of people up that you had on staff that month. Then count up the number of loans that you funded. That's a pretty easy number. You should have off the top of your head. And if you divide those two numbers, what you end up getting is the average number of funded loans per employee that you had in that given month. And it's such an easy number to get to, and it's a meaningless number until you start to track it over time. Most of the lenders that we talk to when we knock on their door and we're trying to sell them software or so forth, they do about, you know, somewhere around 8 to 10. So they're funding 8 to 10 loans per month per employee. Once they get a back office system and they get automated and the efficiencies come into play and so forth, that number can double. So like the average DataTrack client is running about 15 to 20 funded loans per employee. We do have some clients, though, that knock the ball out of the park. We have one client out of Utah. They do between 40 and 50 loans per month per employee. So think about that. They've got 12. Yeah, exactly. Wow. They've got 12 people in their operation, again, not including their loan officers. They have 12 folks, and they're funding 600, 700 units a month. And when I share that with lenders that are doing 8 loans, they can't believe, oh, you're wrong, you miscounted, they must have another office someplace. I mean, I love all the excuses that come flying out of the woodwork. But the reality of it is if you can leverage technology properly, you put in place good policies and procedures, you can absolutely streamline your business. So here's kind of the challenge that I have for the listeners that are on the phone, on the radio show now, is do the calculation. You know, we're coming up on April 1st. So look back at March, count up your people, count up your loans, do the number. Share it with your company, and then set a goal that for the month of April, it'll be better. And I don't care how much better. I don't care what your current number is. Make it better. And then the next month, make it better. And have a goal that by December, you'll be twice as efficient as you are now. And if you hit that goal, have a company party and bring in lunch and cater food and reward the people for all the hard work they're doing. But it's a really simple way to know whether or not you're efficient. So your second point is, sorry, I don't mean to talk over you.
Go ahead.
So your second point, when you go to this hedging strategy, because now you're going to have good data and you're going to have the systems in place, you have to mitigate that risk. You just kind of pick it up. I mean, your whole operation starts to get better. There's fewer mistakes that take place. You have much fewer loans get suspended by the investor because the quality of the loans are all better and so forth. So you're not pulling people off of working on the next loan that hasn't funded. You have to go fix a loan that already did fund, which costs your company a ton of money. So overall, I don't think there's one place, Joe, where I could point to that would say, you know, where do you get the efficiency gain? It's really an across the board. The whole organization just starts to operate more effectively because it has to.
My expectation of going into it would be that the higher the pull through rate, the higher your efficiency.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And again, it's because you're not wasting time on loans that aren't funding. You know, and I just made the comment too. Think about it: when you sell a loan to an investor and they stip you with some kind of suspense item, to get that suspense item cleared, you're pulling somebody off of your production line working on the next loan to go work on a loan where everyone's already made their commissions on it. It's already a funded loan, right? That thing is done. And now they're really wasting their time fixing a broken loan as opposed to working on the next loan that's going to make you the next bit of money. And so eliminating suspenses and getting loans sold quickly to your investor cleanly is really important for all lenders to be focusing on right now.
Well, I want to jump in. We've got 3 minutes remaining on the program for the day, and I want to go back and point out something. I was talking about accounting. You guys have an accounting system. Give it a quick, but you have a component or a module within your system for accounting, and all the data flows through to that. Am I correct?
Well, sort of. We are not an accounting platform, but what we do is we capture all of the elements about every penny that is spent or made on a loan. And then most of our clients, frankly, are on QuickBooks, or there's a product called AMB Accounting for Mortgage Bankers that's out there that we work real well with.
Great system,
so yep. We get all the data out of our database and in a format that can be imported into your accounting system so you're not doing kind of data entry and stuff. But I think the important element on the accounting piece of it is that we have all the data, so all the fees, all your escrow accounts, all your, you know, if you've got, you know, when you're hedging, you're going to receive some interim servicing. People are going to make a payment to you once in a while. You can manage all of that and keep track of your unpaid principal balance and all that other stuff that needs to happen. So all the data gets captured in our system, but we don't want to. We're not an accounting system. We'd like to flow that over and have some other accounting piece take care of that.
Good distinction. It's so important. We've just got a couple minutes left. I know that's what Shelley's going to be meeting with you about, is how you can work that. So many are still using QuickBooks. QuickBooks going to last a lot longer if you get it set up properly, and that's what Shelley is all about. AMB, great system. For the larger companies, that is just probably the system that has got the best tools about it. We're familiar with that company, and our client, that company in Utah, is also a client of ours. We share that one. I want to just shout them out. I wish we could name them by name, but they do such an outstanding job. Those numbers are not – that's not a hyperbolation. Those are real numbers. They are all over it. Folks, we want to thank you so much. Special thanks to you, Ralph, for joining us. Excellent program, great data. We got to have you back soon. I love the energy and I love the information. It's wonderful. Folks, remember this. We are here every week at this same time bringing you information about the industry, data that's important to you to be able to run your business effectively and more profitably. And the goal is to all of us grow and change in this dynamic market. Thank you so much. Stay tuned next week. We're going to be back every week with the rates, the traffic report of all the legislation moving through, and another special guest. Stay tuned. Or come on in. Listen to us. Don't stay tuned. We're out of time, and we would love to have you back and listen to us next week. Again, Rob, thank you so much. Allison, Joe, as always, thank you for being a part of the program. Have a great week, everybody.
Bye, Dave.
Bye-bye.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.